Hello and welcome to Satoshi's Mind, brought to you by Nakamoto. On Satoshi's Mind, we discuss recent trends in the blockchain, DLT, and Web3 space, and some of its applications in other industries with experts working on those ideas. My name is Florian, and yeah, I've been in the blockchain space since like the end of 2013. Then in 2017, I co-founded a company called Advanced Blockchain, which we kind of put together. And yeah, with those companies, we are incubating some of our own projects and also investing in some other projects. And here's my co-host, Connor.
Hey, Florian. I'm Connor Kvyacin. I'm a comedian and an audio person, newcomer to the blockchain, DLT, and Web3 space. I'm here to be a part of the conversation and have a good time. What's been going on with you, Flo? How you been?
Oh, not much. I just got back to New York. I got stuck in Dubai for a while, which I had to go to because otherwise they wouldn't let me in coming from Europe. I got COVID there, so I had to stay a little bit longer, but it wasn't too bad, like no symptoms or anything. So yeah, happy to now be in the States again.
Good. I'm glad COVID wasn't too tough for you. I know it can treat a lot of people very differently. So that's good. Who do we got on today?
So our guest today is Julian Leitloff. Julian is a highly successful entrepreneur, having co-founded a business that brought over 1 million in revenue at 22 years. He was named Forbes 30 under 30 in 2016. And now for the last several years, Julian has been CEO and co-founder of Fractal, which is an open source zero margin protocol that enables the world to take back control of their own personal and behavioral data. Yeah, and it's an open source protocol for exchanging data in a fair and open way. And you can find Fractal on Twitter at Fractal, Fractal, Practl. So like those like together. And Julian at Julian Leitloff with the double F. Welcome to Satoshi's Mind, Julian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so like to jump right into it, how did you end up in like this entire space? Like what got you into like blockchain and Web3
yeah.
and all of that stuff?
Well, actually, the first time that I got in touch was through Bruce Palm, founder of the Ocean Protocol. I pretty much randomly bumped into him at a Berlin tech conference. And we had a really good time and talked about, you know, how you can use tech to build a layer for society to, well, not only from a technical aspect, enhance a product, but enhance the way that we interoperate, basically, right? That we interact with each other. And that was super exciting. But I had just started a company myself. I was like 1.5 years in, and we became friends, and we hung out once in a while, but it took me another two and a half years for me to kind of finish up the first endeavor. That was very different. I was in e-commerce, built up the company, made sure that it was up and running, were able to hand it over to my co-founder. And that was the first time that I was really free to look at other stuff. And I kind of came back to Bruce and wanted to really understand what was going on. And there was a connection that I had before because that, you know, I went into banking at first, thinking that it's a meritocratic market, you know, where you just kind of, there's nothing in between you and the market. You just engage there. And boy, was I in for a big surprise when I went there. It was 5 days before Lehman collapsed. I stayed for 3 years, then quit, did my master's degree. And that was actually a lot of fun. Did research, pretty early research in in crowdfunding. So I had a professor in the field of co-creation that was really knowledgeable, open source governance. And that kind of was the time when I remembered that I wanted to actually be in that space. And I sat down and had to really learn the basics. And it took me longer than I had hoped for. So really to understand the basic mechanics from the ground up. But once I kind of got a glimpse, I just knew that this is something that I want to do. And if, you know, before I was just taking a look at different industries and not being really settled, potentially wanting to continue my academic career. But at that point, I kind of understood, okay, this is something that you want to do for the next 20 years. And you don't even mind if, you know, you're successful early or if success is going to come later. Just the learning experience of it was something that was good enough already. So fast forward 4 years, here we are.
Nice.
4 years, because you're saying it takes a long time. 4 years is, feels like it's still fairly short. Is that 4 years after college or is that 4 years with the education as well?
So the Forbes 30 under 30 was already 5 years ago. So unfortunately, I founded the company kind of while doing my graduate degree. And I finally left it very early in 2017. And we founded Fractal, the company I'm running now, in 2017. But it took those 3 months to really like not do anything, not think about it from a business perspective, but just trying to understand the tech behind it. But yeah, we've been running Fractal for the last nearly 4 years, I guess. And well, it has been a wild ride, just like crypto itself, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been nice. And now you're based and you're currently you're based in Berlin, right? How's the experience there? Like, what would you say about like Berlin blockchain community and like the whole space there?
Well, I mean, first of all, the thing that I just really love about the crypto space is that even more so than the startup space, it's even more international and you don't have a lot of teams that are just physically based somewhere, right? Having said that, so I mean, we're just talking, you're based in New York or Florida and I'm in Berlin. This is your typical setup. So as a matter of fact, most of the people working with Fractal are actually not in Berlin, but in Lisbon, Porto, or, you know, Estonia, you name it. But of course, there's a kind of physical closeness that does help because you get to know people sooner. And something that I'm super excited about is that you have so many very early contributors in that space, just being based in Berlin. I mean, it's not a secret that some of the Ethereum founders are there or are often there. You have the whole Polkadot crew there, Gnosis. And this is the exciting thing because, I mean, if you're looking at the European tech scene, that has always kind of been a second mover, the entrepreneurial generation, right? Where we were known for like copycats in Berlin. And so suddenly we actually have like a really original technology where you can see the advancements right there. And that's quite exciting. Not saying though that I'm much of a like city patriot. I find this kind of weird if you're like trying to compare cities in terms of entrepreneurial skills. I think it's about people and they can be distributed. And I mean, this is how you want to run things, but seeing it each other is kind of nice sometimes, right? Not just using a Zoom call.
Yeah, definitely. I remember that in like 2017, they had like a different, there was like a different meetup every day where you could go to. Hope that's coming back pretty soon, but confident it will eventually. And I think it was like pretty, it's like pretty cool that the whole community is like kind of close and that the people are also like approachable. It's not like, oh, we have this like highly exclusive event where like nobody is invited, but like you can just go and meet a bunch of people.
That's also something that is, I think, a bit unique to the blockchain space. And I mean, I've been very much involved in the startup space, and it is open and it is meritocratic, but there is this feeling of the elite in there as well. And I have never seen an industry that is so welcoming to new people joining than the blockchain space. And I mean, I can speak from experience. I guess something that is driving this is that everyone can still remember when they were the ones that were completely new and had to understand, right? Because I mean, in the end, it's like barely 10 years. I mean.
Yeah. And plus it's always like changing quite a bit. So if you didn't keep on track for like a couple of months, it's like, oh no.
you have to relearn. Exactly. Yeah.
It seems like a big driving factor of the scene too is like beautiful ideologies and philosophies that people hold. We've talked to some people that really want to change the world for a better and really believe in the community mindset. Can you speak a little bit about your personal ideology and beliefs around Web3 and data privacy and all this stuff that you've been working on?
Yeah. And I mean, something that I actually enjoy is that it's quite diverse, and you sometimes have some infighting there, but I guess in the end, like I think it's what enriches the space that you have different angles that people are looking at it, right? Like from a very liberal point of view, that's not necessarily like the way that I'm looking at it. Maybe a bit more from an access point of view, which I feel might not be the most popular way to look at it. But what blockchain really is for me is like it's a permissionless way to access systems. So it's like creating a level playing field, right? Where you don't have to ask for permission to start your business and to run a node or to compete. And no one cares like where you're based. You can be an entrepreneur in India, Germany, in New York. You just have to be better. And that's something that's just hugely resonating with me, right? Also, something is the zero margin open source protocols. I mean, if you think about it, it's pretty socialistic even that you're just like the people provide a service for themselves and thus creating prices that are just introducing a sense of commoditization where prices drop to a point where it's just super cheap. To give you an idea, like what I mean with that is, if you're rich and you want to buy a better iPhone, there's just no alternative, right? There's just the iPhone or the Android phone. You can't just put like $1 million on the table. You get like this huge better phone. So having cheap prices for everyone is actually what's making life affordable and nice. And I see the more open source protocols we have, the more prices are going to drop. I mean, take a look at Uniswap, for example, right? Like how awesome is this piece of technology that we have there? It's like we kind of take the profits away from all these exchanges that have been taking it for the last 300 years. Yeah. And we're redistributing it to people actually helping get this marketplace up and running. While also decreasing the trading margin. And there are so many different examples where we need to implement this type of, well, resource provisioning. And I'm super excited because the next two decades, it's all going to be about that. Replacing proprietary systems with open source zero margin protocols.
Yeah, and like I think that's also like with like Fractal, I feel like you're definitely going into the right direction. They're like trying to like work around all those like bigger tech companies.
We were this is something that we didn't see for a long time. I mean, when we started in 2017, you know, we actively didn't go into the protocol space because we want to learn, we want to build onboarding ramps, because everyone was building their own protocol, but the technology wasn't ready for the most parts of it, right? There were some use cases that we just saw wouldn't be working. And also, you know, you needed to have an onboarding ramp. So we thought, well, the whole identity space is like a whole big mess and we need to build software around it. So that's what we did. And then we played around, toyed around with DIDs, you know, had Sovereign as a customer. So that was, the whole space was like really fruitless. I mean, if you're looking at Sovereign, unfortunately, the foundation went bankrupt. You had the Uport team disassembling. Mm. So it wasn't a fun place to be in, but it was such a very important development that we have there. And we were focusing on the financial angle, which I think, you know, you just heard my passion around like the Uniswap application. But we saw something which is one of the biggest threats that we have for the free web right now, is that actually, you know, free web means that you're not paying with your money, but you are paying with your attention, and deal itself is okay. It's fine, right? But you need to kind of be in control as a user, what you're sharing. And also the money needs to go to the person actually creating the content or creating the stuff that I'm consuming. And that's not happening at all for the last couple of years. We're talking about 60 to 70% of the whole ad market being in the hands of just two companies. And that's just creating a whole hot mess of things online, as in like newsrooms not being able to staff people, blogs not being able to pay their employees or themselves, right? And this is just an equilibrium that is based on data that people provided being stored in data silos, and we have something how we can do it better. Are we going do we have the resources and the momentum because people are joining us to change that? We don't know, but we definitely have to try. And it's kind of a similar situation like in 2017 when I entered the space. I feel so at ease because, look, even if we fail, I think it would be worthwhile. Yeah. Because we need to try it to change something, because otherwise our free web is just not going to exist in a couple of years. I mean, that might sound drastic, but that's just the way it is.
No, I feel like it's definitely more going backwards than forwards right now, with like kind of the introduction of censorship and
just look at last week, right? Like Google said, well, we're not going to allow the cookie. Well, I'm not going to, we're going to get rid of the cookie technology. And the thing is, I'm not going to cry river here, because cookie from a data privacy perspective is terrible, right? But at least a cookie is public, like everyone can read it. So what are they going to replace it with? Well, with a proprietary Google data ad market? Well, thanks for nothing, right? So I mean, and you just hear those horror news like again and again. And you're like, guys, everyone is just watching it. No one's doing anything. I mean, the European Union is now about to step in, but when are we going to see legislation? What, two years down the road? Guys, then it's going to be too late. Then we don't even need to try.
That's what I think is also really interesting about the like blockchain space as a whole, that it can like move really, really quickly because, as you said, like people from everywhere around the world can like basically work on the same thing, because like best case, everybody can trust the software and like build around it and like have the layer two layer, whatever layers. And also
that's a big factor, right? Because I mean, if you're looking at it, nation states right now are kind of like in shock because they can't, it's out of their scope. They can't regulate it. So what are they going to do, right? If you have a international organization that is actually kind of not feasible for individual nations, and like the community of nations not being able to form like a consensus of how to deal with that stuff. So basically the way that I'm looking at blockchains or the code is that it's for the first time kind of like a lingua franca, if you're looking at it from a legal perspective. Like you don't need a judge, right? It's being executed right away. And also someone from China can read it, from Japan can read it, we can all kind of read it and see what it does. And that is super cool. So we kind of have an international governance machine available here where you can completely create new incentive designs. It is kind of like, I mean, I don't want to be too, let's say it is a very interesting moment where I think generations will look back at and be like, well, you were able to just on a green field, just create new governance that we are still living with, that is still governing our everyday life. And that's something super interesting. So I wouldn't want to be in any other field right now.
Yeah. Plus, like, the whole incentive structure with tokens and everything really makes innovation go, like, really fast. I think it's also funny, like, how, like a bunch of governments are still discussing around, like, Bitcoin, like, what do we do with it? Is it good? Is it bad? Then, like, while they were doing that, it was like, oh, here are, like, a bunch of new assets on Ethereum. Like, oh, how do we deal with this now? What are those things? And then it's like, oh, but now you can also trade them in a decentralized way. And then they're like, wait.
It's like, completely overload there.
Yeah. Now we also have derivatives. And yeah. So I wonder how it's going to look like in 10 years.
Yeah. Where does Fractal fall into all this? How does Fractal help rebalance that equilibrium? And for people who don't know, kind of what's the gist of it all about?
So the gist is that you're replacing the cookie with technology that allows for data privacy and ownership while making sure that your data is verifiable. So that sounds a bit vague. Let me make it very specific. What I mean with that is, like, you're not getting a cookie planted into your system, but you have an incentive yourself to say, well, I've been on that site. And the site says, well, yes, I can attest to that. And it's going to be issued against your DID. And that sounds very, well, not opaque, but very complicated. It's not complicated. It's just like SMTP, right? You're using it every day without knowing it because it's your email standard. You just build standards that are just governing the way that data is exchanged. So you're going to have, like, a plugin, maybe like an ad blocker or maybe a browser, whatever plugin it is, or whatever tech it is. It's going to enable you to manage this, and it's saving this data on your local drive. So it's not somewhere centrally. You're controlling it, but it also issues a public pseudonymous timestamp saying, if this person ever shows this thing, it's actually correct, right? And this is something that's completely novel, where you can say something locally and still trust it and still own it as a user and not reveal who you are. Because you can just say, look, for this particular purpose, I'm not going to show you all of my identity stack. I'm just going to show you what's relevant for you. So in one occasion, Julian, the business person, and maybe my income is going to be relevant for you. But in some occasions, I'm just the guy who's interested in sports, and I just want to reveal that I'm a soccer fan, and then they're going to show me an ad about my favorite soccer club, and then I'm going to buy it, and no one's going to know who I am, and this is fine with me. I want to see individualized ads, right? That's okay. I want to be part of a free web. I want to make sure that my favorite soccer blog gets paid. I don't mind. I want them to know what they need to know, but they shouldn't know my name. They shouldn't know how old I am. Why do they care? So you're just sharing. You're kind of having a sharing minimalization principle that you're trying to reduce the amount of data that you're sharing. Unlike cookies, because once you visit a site, everyone can just read everything.
I think that's one of the things that got me. When I was first introduced to Fractal, I was thinking, you know, this is a big push. This is a revolution against the data economy. You know, the social dilemma came out and all that stuff. But what I really realized over time learning about it is it's really an innovation that makes things better for advertisers and the users alike, where it's not rewriting anything, but actually making things better on top of what was a really good idea initially.
I think something that was important to us is like not trying to change the way that the ad ecosystem works in general, not trying to change the way that like bloggers and app builders kind of monetize themselves. And also, and that's important, not changing the way that the user interacts with something. So usually you have something where the necessity is that someone downloads something new, right? And then it takes a lot of time. So why not build it into the products or the tools that we are using that we actually like? So the way that we are designing it right now, given our experience that we have actually working with users, actually authenticating users, I think came in really helpful. And then there's one thing, which is we've been in the DID space for the last 3 years. And when Polkadot came along, we were like, okay, this is going to unlock this huge use case that we just couldn't have built on Ethereum. And I mean, I love it, but if I'm going to issue, even if I use rollups, et cetera, if I'm going to issue an information about me liking a certain soccer club, I'm not going to pay 10 euro in gas fees, right?
So, yeah.
we saw this is an opportunity of a lifetime. And it is right now. There's so much converging at this moment. You have the regulatory space saying, well, this is not great. This is broken. We need to do something. You have the advertisers that are saying, well, there's really no competition. Like 70% of the market is owned by Google and Facebook. So they know that there is something really wrong. And it's actually getting smaller. Like the free ad market is even getting smaller still, and you have the public that's saying, well, something's broken. I've watched The Social Dilemma. I understand that my data is actually not in great hands, and we just saw the opportunity to like really make a push here. It's something that we're actually very excited about, and it doesn't matter if it's us or someone else. And obviously I think that we are pretty well equipped to get there, to actually make it happen, is that the wide availability of DIDs, I think, is going to foster mass adoption in terms of, you know, going beyond the 100 or 200 million users that we are in the crypto space, because suddenly you can build pretty cool stuff on that if people have an ID in that ecosystem, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like the whole like, we talked about like previously, like shortly, how do you define the whole like Web3 space? Like, is it blockchain? Is it like really this like specifically not just like new internet? But I feel like building like a whole new infrastructure for the internet, could be like super, super interesting because like, yeah, you have like right now you have like your DeFi and you have your tokens. But I mean, like what we talk with right now and like what we all use for work every day, it's like the internet, and
right,
there's like so much stuff you can do, like cookies, like you could build like a new whatever, Facebook, Amazon, yeah. Like you can just revisit the entire infrastructure that we built half of our lives around and structure it in like a more efficient user, pro user way.
Exactly. And I mean, we are still kind of missing this AOL moment, right? And I'm talking about back in the days when you got the AOL CD and this was the first time when you went online and suddenly poof, you had like the user base exploding because it went into mainstream. We haven't seen that point yet. We haven't crossed the chasm towards mainstream adoption. That just hasn't happened. So we've been seeing, Bitcoin as a store of value. We have seen Ethereum, cool stuff popping up there. First use case that I actually see being adopted is like Uniswap on that end. Mm-hmm. Now we're seeing NFTs, and that's pretty awesome. But we kind of need the same moment like the iPhone it's usually like a single simple feature. And the iPhone, for example, for most people, it was like a grandkid device to it was a device to see their grandkids, right? This is what it is, not more, not less. And then they kind of got used to it. So we need this one use case that's going to drive millions, hundreds of millions of users into that space. And we don't know what it is yet, but it could be a massive provisioning of DIDs. It could. I'm not saying it definitely will be, because there's so much great work on so many ends. But something that I'm really excited about is that all the Web3 tech that we've seen, and I am including other things next to Polkadot. I'm just very specifically excited about that. But there are certainly other things, and good that there are, because you need to have diversified effort to get there. But suddenly, the water level of what's possible is like sinking, and suddenly you have like all these new use cases that are suddenly out of the water, ready to be tackled, because transactions costs are lower, because stuff is just faster. So a decentralized telecom carrier, how awesome would that be, right? A decentralized Wi-Fi networks, all kinds of things. And I think you can, we will see a generation of entrepreneurs just trying to pick one of these fields and try to introduce this worldwide. And that feels actually quite exciting to me.
Yeah, someone needs to talk to Elon to get his like Starlink things to do something with blockchain as well.
But you know what? I think it's always the same. It's always a new generation, right? It's never the old generation, just like with the internet. It wasn't the big players that, it wasn't the publishers that moved in that really revolutionized the space. And also the entrepreneurs from the very first moment are not the ones that are driving this, the space now, or weren't the drivers of Web2. Maybe as an investor, for sure. By the way, also something that I'm very excited about for Europe, because the States is awesome in terms of entrepreneurial capital. But suddenly we have that same thing in Europe, in Germany as well, right?
Everywhere in the world, if you like do it.
Right, exactly. And so the amount of capital that is available being distributed by nerds to nerds, that's amazing, right? You don't have business school people just going around like putting the business model in spreadsheets saying, take a look if it scales. But you have actually people that got rich banking early on like a moonshot project, having this experience and kind of investing in the same way, thus I think pushing us as society further. And being able to tie in the tech creation with the value creation as well, and being able to finance open source protocols that are not taking away any revenue, having no margin, that's pretty cool. And to be honest, still not a lot of people get it. I mean, even the startup scene, I am so surprised if I'm looking at the VC scene. I mean, they have barely heard of DeFi. If I'm telling them about Uniswap, like taking over, well, most of them at least know Coinbase. They've heard about it because units were invested. And I'm telling them, well, the trading volume is sometimes actually a lot higher. They're like, what? So it's not a company. Yeah. So who's making the money? I'm like, oh God, come on. Why are you calling yourself a VC if you don't know about that stuff?
Plus, you know, on, for example, like Uniswap or platforms like that, you know that it's like real volume because like someone is paying those fees. There's no market maker on the platform doing like a bunch of volume, like for free or like faking it. Well, someone might say like, oh, I'm going to create a bunch of volume here, but he's going to pay for it. So it's like, yeah, real. Also, you mentioned digital identities, which I think, yeah, that's also like a, could also be like a pretty important like stone in the whole like Web3 puzzle. Initially, maybe also to just enable like a bunch of like companies to like go into the space while still being compliant. For example, I guess it could be helpful for like some of the DeFi projects if they're like, yeah, we have this like platform, but don't sue us, please, government, because we're also like collecting the identity of our users. Fractal, like at some point, like you also worked on like KYC and like with like a video ident thing and stuff, right? Like, how does that fit like into the whole like idea now?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So we never did video ident because just awful in terms of user experience and not needed in most jurisdictions. The thing is that, so the issuance of DID that are tied to like know your customer, KYC, AML information, basically the thumbs up saying like, yep, this is a person. We know who that person is. It's a legit person. He or she can sign up to your exchange or whatever. Issuing that is something that is tricky from a regulatory perspective, but to make a long story short, we are still going to go forward with it, even though the issuance of this information is not going to be super ad relevant, right? Like there are more interesting information on that, but we still see that this is something that's just needed in the space, and we just completed our collaboration with Polymath, or about to wrap it up, where we are issuing the KYC DIDs for them natively in the network. And we're going to be providing that using Kilt, which is a DID solution. And we're pretty open there, right? And this is something that we haven't announced publicly yet, but we're going to be offering a Fractal wallet plugin software that kind of acts like a MetaMask, where you can just like have the same experience like you would kind of connect to a MetaMask, but kind of sign in with your full KYC credential. And people, exchanges can use it, and it's completely free. Like, we're not getting anything for it. And we hope they do, but it will be their own risk in terms of regulatory approval.
Yeah.
Because some jurisdictions it's allowed, some others it's not allowed. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
We're checking the user one way or the other. But I think that this is something from a user experience perspective that's just incredible bad right now in the space. Mm-hmm. So we still wanted to get this out and just offer it, and people can use it. It's not going to be super helpful for the Fractal protocol. I mean, there's going to be some features that we're going to build into the plugin, you know, like to experience data staking, for example, give people an idea of the value of the data. But in terms of really scaling Fractal, we have partners for that.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, I was thinking, like, in theory, as I said, with, like, all the DeFi things, like, it, like, for, like, a DeFi project, it, like, especially if it's, like, easy to use, like, a MetaMask thing, if you plug in this digital identity, it could be really cool, for example, for, like, for example, let's say the SEC says, okay, we don't like those people, let us hunt them down wherever they are in the world. And it's always good if you can say, like, well, we're doing everything we possibly can to make sure to be compliant. For example, we have this DID solution.
I mean, it's important from a user perspective, because you just do it once and then you can kind of just browse the web, even if it's a regulated use case. But I think for what it's more important, it's actually for the for innovation in the well, not necessarily DeFi, because it's, you only need it if it's centralized finance. But I think there's a case to be made for also centralized finance to be around, because it offers an advantage in terms of user experience in some cases.
Yeah, you get to use your identity everywhere, not only on this one page, right?
Exactly. But I guess the thing is, like, if you have to pay like 15K upfront just to kind of contract with a KYC provider, that's just not going to work. And it's just going to cut off some innovation or some companies, some startups that can use this money to like actually build things. And we're hoping to kind of contribute here that it's just a lot easier to start companies in that field without having too much regulatory risk that you're running because you're not doing KYC at all.
Yeah, definitely makes sense.
Speaking of UX a little bit, where are you all at with people, normies like myself, other people getting involved in Fractal, using it, as well as advertisers and other companies like that?
Mm. Yeah, I think the first use case is really going to be the plugin, where you can easily download and see your DID credential. Have a super smooth onboarding experience. We're already working with some companies that want to use it, that have like reusable use cases. Talking about launch pads, issuing platforms, and the likes. I mean, if you always need to read KYC, just if you want to participate in a new sale, that's quite a hassle. And the next part is going to be the data staking, which is like you kind of are your own verifier saying like, I'm actually putting money on that data because it's correct, right? And you're being paid for it. Think like a Uniswap liquidity provisioning, but you're kind of just providing liquidity on your own data. So you're getting a part of like an extra incentive on top of it for making sure that it's reliable.
How close are you all to doing that now, to having people be able to just get the plug-in and stuff like that?
That's a matter of weeks, actually. Wow. So that's going to be soon. Not talking about full network launch, right? This is going to be a software side solution. But also in terms of networks launch, we're making quite some progress, looking towards launching the testnet in the summer, having tests, they're running tests, making sure we actually have a game theoretic approach, and then not theoretic, but actually practical approach. Make sure that we give it a kick and see if it works. And the plan to have the network live is October 6th. So that's quite something.
Wow. That seems like it's fast approaching. Does it feel that way? Or do you all feel pretty good about that timeline?
Coming from a startup space, it feels like it's a long time. But then again, you're not building a product, you're building a protocol, right?
Yeah.
So that is a whole different animal. And the thing is, we've seen that because we've been helping people that were doing launches, like Ocean, for example, and some other ones. But watching and doing it yourself are just very different things. And let's see if I'm going to be so chill in a couple of months and the deadlines are approaching. And I'm pretty sure we're going to also hit some problems, some challenges. But it was important to us to actually set a challenging deadline. I mean, if you're looking at even really impressive projects like Falcon, right, they took like 3 years, 4 years. To actually go to network launch. We want to be a bit smaller, but get feedback faster. I think that's important. If you want to design something, don't over-engineer, go to market, see how people react to it, and then build for what they actually do and not what you think they might be doing.
I know we're getting closer on time. I do have one more question, and I'm not sure if you have more as well, Flo. But I know you all had your IDO about 3 weeks back or so. How are things with that? How does that play into that strategy moving forward?
Yeah, I guess it's the same strategy, right? Like we didn't want to like have a big sale and then go to market after like a year, but we wanted to really just take up as little as we can to go to market, because this is where our user base is. And if we don't include them, we felt like that would be kind of weird. So I'm very happy that we did that. The launch went super smooth. We actually had a lot of support, and a lot of also very fundamental support. So, you know, people reaching out, founders from the ad tech space that I wasn't even aware that they were so deep in the trenches of investing or like participating in sales and being in blockchain. So that really helped with our visibility. And of course, we need to now also involve the community, but it's actually a big asset when you can ask people what they actually want, right?
Mm. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Was it successful overall? Do you feel like the process was smooth enough?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had one of the biggest sales on PokerStarter. Sold out in like 8 minutes or so. And the launch was pretty smooth, just hit the decks, did a 7x and have been pretty stable since. And we can now like prove that we can provide this value, but also have like quite a bit of room to grow. So this was the bet that we were gunning for. Like we didn't want to have this typical, like, I don't know, 20x, 30x, because everything that pumps up like that is bound to come down. And we rather want to prove ourselves over time, and build up like a static flow of good mid to long term progress that we can show. So you will actually not hear like those short term marketing corporations from us. So maybe you'll have like a week of radio silence or just, you know, just some shallow news. But then you will also have like this big announcement of actually user adoption. And that's what's important to us. And this is what we need to prove long term, right? Like, I mean, I can say that now, but everyone can say it, but actually proving it is a different thing. And that's what we need to do in the next couple of weeks and months and years.
Well, I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Flo, do you have any final questions?
No, I think we covered mostly everything. Thank you so much for listening to Satoshi's Mind with our guest, Julian Lightloff. You can find Fractal on Twitter at Fractal, PRCTL, as like one word, and Julian at Julian Lightloff with a double F. And yeah. Great to have you, Julian. Was like really interesting to get your whole view on like where everything is going, and also pretty great to learn more about Fractal, and looking forward to seeing how that develops over the next months and years and integrates with the whole like Web3 thing that we were talking about.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Florian Connor. It was a pleasure being on the show, and it went quick, so I hope that also your listeners enjoyed the podcast. I certainly did. Always happy to hear feedback. Guys, please reach out if you have any, if you want to get involved. You know, take a look at Telegram, pretty active community of nearly 40,000 people. Thanks for giving me the chance to talk about Fractal.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. If you want to follow this show, you can head to Twitter and follow our handle at Satoshi's_mind. And you can follow Nakamoto on Twitter at S_Nakamoto_TO. Julian, thank you so much again.